to look at our top stories this hour. Iran censures the visit by the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency to Tel Aviv on the eve of its upcoming meeting, warning this could erode the body's credibility. 100 days into the Ukraine war, Kiev vows victory as Moscow says military operation will continue until all its goals are achieved. Yemenis take to the streets in the country's major cities in protest against the Saudi-led war on their country. It's good to have you with us. Tehran reacts after the controversial visit by the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency to Israel, days after criticism of Iran's peaceful nuclear program. Iran's foreign ministry warns of further erosion of the agency's credibility, while its Director General kept silent on Israel's secret nuclear arsenal. Ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh says this questions the IAEA's impartiality. Iran is one of the signatories to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Israel, however, has never signed up to the treaty that aims to ensure civilian use of the nuclear technology. The regime backs the draft resolution prepared by the U.S. and its allies to rebuke Iran by the IAEA Board of Governors. Tehran has warned against any unconstructive action at the upcoming meeting of the body, saying it will respond immediately and proportionately.
This is the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. The Vienna-based agency is supposed to monitor compliance with the 1968 Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The NPT has been described as the centerpiece of global efforts to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons, promote cooperation in the peaceful uses of nuclear energy, and to achieve the goal of nuclear disarmament. The IAEA is supposed to have technical and professional cooperation with NPT signatories away from politics. The Atomic Agency has had a high-profile role regarding Iran's nuclear energy program. In 2015, when Iran and the P5+1 struck a deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the IAEA was tasked with monitoring Iran's compliance with the terms of the agreement. In many of its reports over the past years, the agency has said that it has found no evidence of any diversion in Iran's nuclear program. As the fate of the faltering 2015 deal remains increasingly unclear, the technical role and supposed independence of the atomic watchdog are being tested. In a recent report, the IAEA said Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium had grown to more than 18 times the limit allowed in the 2015 agreement. The agency also said Iran has failed to answer its remaining questions. Tehran described the IAEA's latest statements as one-sided, saying that it fails to reflect Iran's extensive cooperation with the agency.
The International Atomic Energy Agency seems to be succumbing to the same sort of takeover that the United States and the Anglo-Zionist Empire has been doing to so many other international organizations, such as, for example, in athletics, for example, in economics with the World Economic Forum, for example. All these organizations, they seem to want to control them.
Meanwhile, reports say Western countries lobbied by Israel are planning to push the International Atomic Energy Agency to criticize Iran at its upcoming meeting of the Board of Governors.
Iran has repeatedly warned that the IAEA's work must remain technical and away from politics. This week, Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian warned against any political interference in the technical affairs of the agency. He stressed the need for avoiding political approaches in the forthcoming Board of Governors meeting. This as Israel has stepped up its campaign to get the West on board to pile pressure on Iran. Let's see this next report.
Back in March, Rafael Grossi, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, visited Iran. The IAEA and Iran announced at the end of the visit that they had agreed on an approach for resolving remaining bilateral issues. The visit came as representatives from Iran and the P4+1 were trying to find a way to move forward in their negotiations aimed at reviving the 2015 deal. The talks are currently stalled, with Iran saying the United States is failing to make necessary political decisions. At this point, any stance by the Atomic Agency could have an important effect on the stalled talks. This week, Iran's top diplomat said Tehran and the agency's agreement in March was mutually satisfactory. He warned that political interference in the technical affairs of the agency is totally unconstructive. Amir Abdullahian's comments came ahead of a meeting of the IAEA's Board of Governors scheduled for June the 6th. Days left to the meeting, the IAEA chief has arrived in Israel after Tel Aviv released documents alleging Iran spied on the IAEA. Iran says Israel, which has refused to join the NPT and is believed to possess hundreds of nuclear warheads, hates the JCPOA and wants to derail the effort to revive it.
The problem with much of what the International Atomic Energy Agency has been doing is that it is trying to find excuses to really, I suppose, make out that the Iranian nuclear program is a military program. And what one of the problems with the IAEA is they're not looking anywhere near as closely at the Israelis, who do have nuclear weapons. They tried to keep it secret, but Mordecai Vanunu blew the whistle in the Sunday Times here in Britain back in the 1980s and did a massive jail term for his when he was kidnapped, actually, for his trouble. That they do have many nuclear weapons, probably something like 200, they say.
Reports say the United States and its Western allies, pushed by Israel, plan to pile pressure on Iran at the upcoming IAEA meeting. Tehran has warned that it would respond firmly and appropriately to any such move because Tehran has been cooperating based on the agreement reached in March. The fate of months of negotiations between Iran and the P4+1 seems to be at stake as a meeting of the IAEA Board of Governors draws close. Who would benefit from a possible collapse of the talks?
Iran's president says the admission by Washington that a maximum pressure campaign against the country has failed means that the Iranian nation has defeated the United States. Ebrahim Raisi made the comment ahead of the 33rd anniversary of the passing away of the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. The president hailed Imam Khomeini as a leader who always stood up to arrogant powers, including the U.S. He added that the late Imam's teachings have inspired the Iranian nation to make remarkable progress over the past decades.
150 foreign ambassadors and officials have visited Tehran to take part in the 33rd anniversary of the passing away of a man who changed the course of history in Iran, Imam Khomeini. Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini was the founder of the Islamic Republic and the former leader of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, which put an end to centuries of autocracy in Iran. Here, people believe the scale of Imam Khomeini's impact transcends Iran's boundaries.
The Islamic Revolution of Iran has proved to the Nigerian populace that if you are determined to eliminate any unjust leader and you follow the course, you can reach a result in some of the curriculum of the higher education in Nigeria. There are some space being open for Imam Khomeini to talk about the Imam Khomeini and the revolution of Islamic Republic in Nigeria curriculum of education.
Thanks to Imam Khomeini, we have witnessed a freedom-seeking movement forming in Muslim and even non-Muslim nations, which challenges imperialism and encourages dignity and independence from the global arrogance. This is the miracle of the Islamic Revolution.
Imam Khomeini passed away in 1989 at the age of 86, almost a decade after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, which saw the overthrow of the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime in Iran, headed by Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, known as the Shah. Imam Khomeini spent many years in exile in Iraq, Turkey, and France, from where he led a swelling grassroots movement, which ultimately ousted the Shah and led to the formation of the Islamic Republic.
For us, Imam Khomeini is a role model of resilience in the face of injustice. Today, we have come to renew our allegiance with him and the lessons that he taught us about self-reliance and resistance against the bullies of the world.
Imam Khomeini established the Islamic Republic following a referendum held in 1979, when, based on official reports, more than 98% of eligible voters voted yes to the Islamic Republic.
Imam Khomeini is remembered here as the pioneer of a new era in Iran's history, an era that put centuries of monarchy behind and upended the Shah's domestic and foreign policies, replacing them with a political system that tries to rule the country based on the motto of independence from the West. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
A ceremony has also been held in the Russian capital to mark the 33rd passing away anniversary of Imam Khomeini. Marina Kurtanova reports from Moscow.
Russia's Institute of Oriental Studies held a ceremony in Moscow to remember the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. Leading Iranian Islamic scholars of Russia gathered to discuss the secrets behind the success of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. In his speech, senior advisor to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ghulam Ali Haddad-Adel, who is in Moscow, noted that independence and national identity are the two main elements of commonality between Iran and Russia.
We just need to look around a little at the changes taking place in the world. We will learn a lesson from the history of Iran-Russia relations over the past 50 years. They may well cooperate together in developing spiritual values. What happened to Iran and Russia over the past four decades is a confirmation of Imam Khomeini's correct ideas and statements about politics. Over the years, the ideological values and philosophy of the Western revolutionaries cause only questions and doubt. It looks weak. Khomeini philosophy, ideas, and even the prophetic thoughts after the passage of time only confirm to us the correctness and completeness of his assessment of today's political events.
On the sideline of the conference, participants visited the exhibition of Russian artist Sergei Feofanov, Flight of Simurgh, dedicated to the World Day of Memory and Millennium of Persian Poet, classic of Persian literature Abu Qasem Ferdowsi. The presented works, both sculpture and paintings, were made during his trips to Iran.
We are all connected with Iran by the logic of a common culture. For example, in Russian literature, the fragment of the poem Shahnameh Ferdowsi has become part of Russian folklore. Yeah, Ruslan Lazarevich, the hero of the ancient Russian fairy tale, goes back to the ancient Persian epic about Rustam, and there are many such examples.
Russian-Iranian ties have a very long history. Cultural and scientific interaction has never been interrupted. Even today, Russian historians and scientists recall the mysticism and philosophy of Imam Khomeini. Ideas. Marina Kartanova, Moscow.
100 days into the war in Ukraine, Russia says it'll continue its military operation until all its goals are achieved. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says one of Moscow's main goals is to protect people of the self-proclaimed republics of Donetsk and Luhansk. With war raging in eastern Ukraine, Peskov says Russia has achieved certain results. He says these include what he called liberation of some areas from Ukrainian military control. However, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky pushed back, pledging victory against Russian forces. Moscow launched a military operation in Ukraine on February 24th. It came after the United States and its allies ignored Moscow's complaints about NATO's expansion near Russian borders. Thousands of Yemenis take to the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities, including Sa'da and Hadja, in a public display of the nation's resolve against the Saudi-led war on the country. Demonstrators with Yemen's flag chanted slogans against the aggressors and their key ally, the United States. The Yemenis were on the streets to make it clear to the enemies that their country will remain independent and free. The demonstrations were held in honor of the late founder of Ansarullah movement, Hussein al-Houthi. The demonstrators also slammed dishonest calls for peace made by certain Arab governments that have normalized relations with the Israeli regime. The Yemenis reiterated their support for the Palestinian cause. UN envoy for Yemen Hans Grundberg says parties of the war in Yemen have agreed to extend the truce for another 2 months. Analysts say the agreement could pave the way for ending the conflict. Abdul Latif Al-Washili reports from Sana'a.
Following intense UN-supervised meetings between the warring sites in Yemen, the UN envoy for Yemen announced that the parties have agreed to renew the current truce in Yemen for 2 more months. The truce is extended under the same terms as the original agreement, which first came into effect on the 2nd of April.
When the United Nations agreed to our conditions, which included releasing the salaries of government employees, we saw that it was our duty to respond to the renewal of the truce, although we were aware that the enemy would not respect the truce as it did previously. But we adhere to peaceful solutions and we will make concessions in order to end the war.
Observers say renewing the truce is a win for the Yemenis who stood alone during 7 years of war without any support from the international community or the United Nations.
The United Nations was absent throughout the years of war, and the armistice is not an achievement for the international body, but rather a success for Sana'a, which remained alone in facing war and siege without any support from the international community or any allies.
Grundberg said he will continue engaging with the parties to implement and consolidate all elements of the truce.
People, he hoped that renewing the UN brokered truce will build for a comprehensive political solution to end the war that devastated their lives and country. They say the international community should now step in properly to support the political process in Yemen. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Turkey's inflation rate hit 73.5% in May, the highest since 1998. The high inflation is blamed on soaring food and energy prices. Official data showed food prices rose by 91.6% year-on-year in May, while transport climbed by 107.6%. Critics believe the economic crisis is associated with President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's monetary policy of pushing for lower interest rates. Moreover, the currency has lost more than 48% of its value over the past year. The Turkish lira further fell against the dollar on Friday and now stands at 16.49 amid rumors of a military intervention in northern Syria. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Thanks for your company. Stay with us.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Fundamentals of Imam Khomeini's political thought. In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. One of the fundamental principles of Imam Khomeini's thought was to concentrate main issues on the axis of the pure Muhammadan Islam, as the Imam used to call true Islam. The thought rules out secular Islam and backward Islam. He said, "Islam is the religion which opens the way toward man's spiritual sublimity through material activities." He also said, "Genuine Islamic recognition will guide us to the advancement of a society full of human talents and piety and social justice." Imam Khomeini, instead of relying on hollow materialistic powers, seriously relied on God's infinite power, as he believed that God will not leave alone his helpers and the helpers of his religion. The Imam experienced the hardest events with the same thought and belief. He did everything as a religious duty. His jihad in the way of God, his effort for formation of the Islamic rule, and thwarting the plots of enemies were all done for God's satisfaction. This does not mean that he didn't pay attention to social and economic affairs of people. Rather, he took everything into consideration, but through putting Islamic laws into practice. Imam Khomeini deeply believed in people's power. He considered all walks of life like himself. And this was the reason why the entire nation loved and supported him. The idea of republicanism was based on this very thought, as the Imam strongly believed that the system belongs to the people. In view of this, he kept recommending officials that they are the servants of people rather than their bosses. Imam Khomeini considered support for the poor parallel with social justice and a struggle against injustice and corruption. In view of this, among his main ideals were to materialize social justice, minimize class gap, remove unjust discriminations, support the poor, and fight poverty. Imam Khomeini paid high attention to struggle against oppression and global arrogance. The thought had its roots in the Quran and Islamic narrations. He would stand against any tyrant and oppressor both in social and political fields. Accordingly, he staged uprising against the tyrannical regime of Mohammad Reza Pahlavi and overthrew it with God's favor and people's support. He also stood courageously against the U.S., calling it as the Great Satan. The Imam was the first one who said, "America cannot do a damn thing." This has turned into the slogan of anyone who struggles against the U.S. Imam Khomeini turned the issue of fighting the fabricated Zionist regime and supporting the Palestinian nation into the main issue of the Islamic world. Imam Khomeini was the main caller to and banner bearer of unity. He believed that unity should be observed among all Islamic denominations and ethnic groups. According to the Quranic principle, the Imam maintained that no one is superior to others except for God-weariness. Today, the enemies of Islam, enjoying media empire, is doing its best to sow seeds of differences in a bid to weaken the Islamic Ummah and make various Islamic denominations suspicious of each other. This is aimed at misleading minds and thoughts from the main enemy, the U.S., and the fabricated regime of Israel. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, was a true believer in independence. It means negation of all kinds of dependence, particularly on enemies. However, independence does not mean negation of interaction and communication with others. What is important as a principle in Islam is to negate dominance of foreigners and enemies on Muslims. This is against dignity and freedom of Islamic communities. One of the clear manifestations of independence in Imam Khomeini's thought was his special attitude toward relations with the U.S. From the beginning of his struggle against the Pahlavi tyranny, the Imam made it clear that the United States is the main cause of the Shah treachery and crimes against the Iranian people and the world. Therefore, he adopted an independent and uncompromising stance against Washington. Permanent struggle against the arrogant in the world, especially the U.S., and support for the oppressed and downtrodden was the infrastructure of Imam Khomeini's political ideology. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the American leaders have conspired incessantly to restrain this revolution or isolate it, to defeat it. This, however, has not escaped Imam Khomeini's sharp look, as the U.S. has failed in all of its plots. Imam Khomeini called the U.S., the government and not the people of the U.S., as the criminal of history. Source of corruption, great Satan, world devourer, spiteful enemy of the world oppressed, number one enemy of mankind, enemy of Islam and the international looter. Imam Khomeini called relation with the U.S. as the relation of wolf and lamb. He said that the superpowers want to milk us and there is no benefit in relation with them.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and since we're still basking in the birthday anniversary celebrations of our innocent lady of Qom, Hazrat Fatime Ma'sume, peace be upon her, the daughter of the Holy Prophet's seventh infallible successor, Imam Musa Kazim, peace be upon him, let us listen to a saying in her honour, by her nephew, Imam Muhammad al-Taghi al-Jawad, peace be upon him. Whoever visits the tomb of my aunt in Qom, aware of her status, will be granted paradise by God Almighty.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, types of enemies. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the types of enemies in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic teachings, we see that there are two types of enemies. And the first type of enemies that are being said in the Quran and in the, obviously, Islamic teachings, that is the enemies with whom we have dispute on the basis which are irrational, and on the emotional basis we have a dispute with them, or we think that they are our enemies. They are our enemies. And this is wrong in the eyes of Islam. Obviously, when we talk about the Islamic lifestyle, anything which is irrational, anything which is based on the emotions only and not the intellect, that is being refused by the Islam, that has been rejected by the Islam. Therefore, Islam does not accept such type of being enemy or such type of dispute, because generally when we see in our life, in our daily life, we see this kind of disputes or these kinds of enemies. For example, if there are two people, their minds are not same, they have dispute on the selection of clothes, maybe on the selection of things, maybe they have general dispute, maybe when you go out your neighbors have dispute with you about something, a specific thing, and we start considering them as our enemies. This is wrong. The dispute, a simple dispute or irrational or emotional disputes, cannot make someone enemy of the other. Therefore, in the Islamic lifestyle, if someone through the emotions, someone through irrationality is considering another person as the enemy, this has been forbidden and this is not allowed. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the types of the enemy, and we were talking about the first type where we said that where two people become enemy of each other because of irrationality and because of the emotional basis. And this has been forbidden in Islam. Maybe, you know, there are two people who had maybe misbehaved each other. Maybe they were unethical, and they have wrong actions or deeds against each other. Maybe someone has said something wrong about the other person. So on these bases, we cannot consider the other person as the enemy of self. Yes, there is a dispute. Maybe he is disrespecting me, but it does not give me the authority to think that he is my enemy. I cannot make him enemy, obviously. And when I cannot make him enemy, I need to behave in a way so that this dispute is being unveiled, or maybe it's been waved off, or I need to deal with him in a way so that he can get closer to me, as we see in the life of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam as well, where a lady, an old lady, used to throw garbage every day when Prophet used to pass from the streets, from the front of her house. And after a couple of days, when she was no more throwing that garbage on the Prophet, Prophet asked people, why that lady is not coming anymore out? And they said, like, she became sick. So he entered to her house, and he looked after that old lady and brought some food and fruits for her. And it changed the mentality and the mindset of that old lady towards the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So therefore, with his actions, the Prophet has proved that even if a person, because of some reasons, is throwing some garbage on me, having a dispute, and does not believe on what I believe, I need to show my generosity. I need to show kindness, because this is what I am, and I should not answer them the way they are basically reacting upon me. So therefore, the reaction of, we need to have a proper reaction about what other people do, and a proper action and reaction can result in a good friendship, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
These days, it's easier than ever to get lost in the virtual world. A unique museum in the U.S. is using augmented reality for visitors to plug into a thrilling experience about the Earth's environmental challenges. The New York Museum is called Arcadia Earth. It offers a large-scale, multisensorial journey through underwater worlds, mountains, savannas, and inspirational fantasy lands. Each exhibit is brought to life through immersive technology and animated by augmented and virtual reality, including projection mapping. One installation is made of 44,000 plastic bags, the amount used in New York every minute before a plastic bag ban was implemented. The museum founder says the goal is to raise awareness about the impacts of climate change in a fun way.
The intention is to inspire people to come and leveraging game and immersive beauty to deliver a message. And I think that if this technique were to be used in school, we will so learn much more and every kid will want to go to school. And at the end of the day, the purpose is just to deliver the message. The tools are just techniques. So I really think that this technique, it's super fun and will work for everyone.
Vittori added that the experience is meant to encourage people to be proactive in protecting the planet. The exhibit also spotlights other environmental challenges such as overfishing and food waste. Proceeds from tickets sold are used to plant mangrove trees. This exhibit has been held in several cities across the United States, and each time proceeds have been used to support various environmental causes.
A man in the city of Soran in Iraq's autonomous Kurdistan region has become a local celebrity for a rather peculiar feature on his face. Hussein Abdullah Ahmed is famous for a record-breaking length of his mustache. Ahmed has been going by the name Mr. Mustache for decades now. His mustache has reached a length of 2.4 meters, making him a well-known man in the city he hails from. His son says, however, that his father's unusual feature is nothing new for him.
I've always known my father likes this since I was born. Although there were times when I had seen his mustache short. My dad is famous for his mustache, and we're proud of him.
Ahmed admits his mustache troubles him while working on the farm or trying to sleep. But to avoid the trouble, he either ties it from behind or stuffs it under his clothes. The 73-year-old man is not planning to get rid of his facial hair, which he hasn't trimmed since 1994. He seems to be enjoying the ride of fame as people stop him on the streets to take selfies with him.
A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular. The engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. The contemporary ceramics exhibition kicks off at the Villa d'Atres Art Foundation near the French city of Avignon. The exhibit showcases nearly 130 artworks of all sizes. Some are so big they are put on display outdoors. The foundation has curated these modern forms from roughly 100 artists from all over the world. The exhibit displays an exceptional diversity of eclectic works presenting sophisticated skills and artistry. Participating artists say working with clay and playing with glazes always produces a unique item that often generates a profoundly universal reaction. The goal of the event is to show how ceramic art has returned to the forefront of the contemporary art scene. The annual Vivid Life Festival has returned to Sydney after being cancelled 2 years in a row due to the coronavirus pandemic. The event kicked off with fireworks and lighting the sails of the Sydney Opera House. Iconic structures like the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Museum of Contemporary Art Australia are part of a series of new canvases this time around. As an added treat, the 2022 festival also has the longest continuous light walk in the history of the event. Plus, this year's highlights include a choreographed light show by 600 drones. Both residents and tourists have been anticipating the return of the show.
I saw it about 8 years ago, I think, and it's just got better and better, as far as I can tell. I mean, the Opera House is the most amazing canvas possible to project, this just amazing digital artwork. The vibrancy of it, the colour of it, the animation of it, the explosiveness of it, the colour just bursts out in just amazing ways, that the snakes, the chameleons, the lizards crawling across it.
The Harbour City will glow with 50 light installations, the projection artworks, as well as over 100 musical events. Vivid Sydney is an annual festival that lasts for 23 nights, infusing art, innovation and technology while collaborating with boundary-pushing artists. In 2019, the festival attracted millions of attendees. The event is owned and managed by the Tourism and Major Events Agency of the Government of New South Wales. Chilean scientists believe they have found the world's oldest living tree in a lush green forest in the south of the country. The scientists say their study shows an ancient cypress known as the Great Grandfather might have beaten the record for the world's oldest tree by six centuries. The bristlecone pine tree in eastern California is the current record holder with over 4,800 years of age. The scientist who led the study says the sample they extracted and other dating methods suggest that the Chilean cypress with a 4 meter thick trunk is over 5,000 years old.
We could count all the rings, but we know it's not the tree's age. It's an estimation of what we call a minimum age. So for this kind of tree, the scientific challenge is to estimate with science the part that we do not see and that is missing. And that is what we did with the millennial Alersi. This method tells us that 80% of all possible growth trajectories give us an age of this living tree greater than 5,000 years. There's only a 20% chance that the tree is younger.
Borisovich is, however, concerned about visitors harming the tree, which is located in the Costero National Park. He says visitors are still able to circle the tree's base, step on its roots, and even take pieces of its bark. The tree is a conifer native to Chile and Argentina and can grow to heights of up to 45 meters.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The world's oldest living man has just turned 113 years and says he's going to be around at least 10 more years. Good for him. Born on May the 27th, 1909 in Venezuela, Juan Vicente Perez Mora is still in pink of his health and memory and does not take medication. He has no trouble recalling his childhood marriage and the names of his siblings, children, and grandchildren. He has 41 grandchildren, by the way. So what is the secret behind a long life? Work hard, rest on holidays, go to bed early, love for God, and always carry him in your heart. The Guinness World Records declared Perez Mora the oldest living person last week. The meadows in the foothills of the Swiss Alps have turned white these days, with locals calling it May snow. But it has nothing to do with snow. It's all about narcissus blooms covering the hills above the town of Montreux. Locals call the scene May snow because it looks like a blanket of snow from a distance. The flowers have been a tourist attraction since the 19th century, but factors such as urbanization have caused their decline in the past few years. Humans have disrupted the turtle survival for years due to their greed for meat, eggs, skin, and shells. But the decreasing population of the species is creating conscience of conservation. Cambodians have released hundreds of turtles of an endangered variety into the wild on World Turtle Day. About 600 Cantor's giant soft-shell turtles were let into a river in northeastern Cambodia. After people collected the species from a holding pool, Cambodian monks blessed the tiny creatures, then set them free. The Wildlife Conservation Society was the organizer of this event. It said that only a few records of Cantor turtles have remained in Laos, while they have mostly been wiped out in Vietnam and Thailand. The body has so far released over 1,500 hatchlings into the wild in 2022. Artists in a small town in the United Kingdom have created a massive bumblebee mural, hoping to raise awareness about this vanishing species. The mural was painted on the playing field of a primary school in the town of Haptonbridge. It was debuted on International Bee Day. The artist used paints typically used to draw lines for football pitches. Scientists say rising temperatures and heavy pesticide use are contributing to the decline in the number of bumblebees across Europe and North America. They say the population reduction rate is consistent with mass extinction of a species altogether. Children at a school have also created a wildflower meadow to help encourage bees to pollinate.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Humans have had an unprecedented impact on land, with vast consequences for climate change, food systems and biodiversity, a major new UN report concludes. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written jointly by Aruna Gandhraskar and Daisy Dune Writers. This article is published under the heading Human Activity Altered 70% of Earth's Land and Degraded 40% of It. Here's the story. Humans have had an unprecedented impact on land, with vast consequences for climate change, food systems, and biodiversity, a major new UN report concludes. It says that human activities have already altered 70% of Earth's land surface, degrading up to 40% of it. Four of the nine planetary boundaries, limits on how humans can safely use Earth's resources, have already been exceeded. Food systems, a catch-all term to describe the way humans produce, process, transport, and consume food, are the largest culprit when it comes to land degradation, the report says. They account for 80% of deforestation, 29% of greenhouse gas emissions, and the leading share of biodiversity loss. The degradation of land is perpetuated by steep inequalities. It notes that 70% of the world's agricultural land is controlled by just 1% of farms, primarily large agribusiness, the report notes. The report from the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification, UNCCD, urges world leaders to adopt a crisis footing to solve land degradation. The authors warn that at no other point in modern history has humanity faced such an array of familiar and unfamiliar risks and hazards. It projects that if business as usual continues to 2050, an additional 16 million square kilometers, an area almost the size of South America, could be degraded. By contrast, if the world prioritizes land protection and restoration, it could lead to the creation of 4 million kilometers of new natural areas by 2050, with benefits for tackling climate change and biodiversity loss. Carbon Brief walked through five key takeaways from the UN's Milestone Land Report. The new report is by the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification. The convention is the only legally binding framework that addresses desertification and the effects of drought and has 197 parties. It was established in 1994 via a direct decision at the 1992 Rio Earth Summit, which also gave the world the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change and Convention on Biological Diversity. Well, dear listeners, here we interrupt the normal course of our program and go live to Press TV headquarters, where we have programs and debates on the 33rd passing away anniversary of the founder of Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him. And later during the program, we will air the live coverage of the speech of the leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on the 33rd passing away anniversary of Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him. Please take a listen.
Imam Khomeini's
vision, and it's all based on the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his own commitments. If you look at the history of Islam and look at the early history of the Prophet, he operated in exactly the same way. It was only in self-defense, which is exactly what Imam Khomeini, exactly what Imam Khamenei are both doing. And I think that that struggle will not end until Israel falls. Once Israel falls, which it will, because it just will, it's just plain as obvious. You can see there's only 11 or 12 kilometers between the river and the sea, and there's a nation which has foreigners imported who have no real ideological power. They simply have a lot of technological weapons and $4 billion of American cash, which is just the surface of what allows them to act arrogantly and to treat their people with cruelty. But Iran has resolved that it will not reverse its kind of course. It will continue to stand against Israel. And it's in the interests of the Iranian people, too, because if you were to leave Al-Quds or leave the region, the reality is Israel would be inside Iran. It would 100%, it already is. It carries out assassinations, target killings on a fairly consistent basis. The most recent was the IRGC officer, which it had to admit that eventually it was. This is the kind of violation of other sovereignty which Israel takes as normal and which is ratified by the imperialist powers. And it is why Iran can never rest and never let go of Imam Khomeini's advice, and where it has to remain steadfast no matter what price one has to pay.
Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, as we speak, Imam Khomeini's grandson, Hujjatul Islam wal Muslimin, Sayyid Hassan Khomeini, is delivering a speech welcoming the participants, and this is going to be followed by the leader of the Islamic Revolution's speech, which is going to take place any time from now. So I'm going to ask you another question, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut short in the midst of it just as soon as the leader starts his speech. So my question is, Imam Khomeini shaped the political order that emerged following the revolution. How do you describe his role?
Well, I think that his role was, first of all, as a visionary, because, you know, the people, visionaries and leaders make assessments about who should be part of that movement. And you only you recognize a leader through also who he selects as his key, if you like, vanguard or his supporters. And when I look at, say, Grand Ayatollah Beheshti, when I look at Ayatollah Murtaza Mutahiri, or if I look at any number of the people who were involved with Imam Khomeini in his early stages, you can see that the caliber and the quality of those individuals reflected Imam Khomeini himself. This was a great skill, and it was based on, I think, basira, which is really insight, which is goes beyond wisdom. The man was wise, but he also had basira, and basira is a very rare gift, and I believe that it comes also from Imam Khomeini's spiritual practices. It's not to be underestimated, the kind of spiritual practice and the regimenting that he did and the living of a pure, purified life. He made a big deal of purification and living a purified sort of life, a tayyib lifestyle. I think this all very much helped those people around him to understand that he was exactly as they would like, and they gave them the opportunity to give their all as well. But it's the caliber and quality and the minds that he had around him, which I think is one major reflection. I think also his success is based on a very concise and brilliant mind, which could cut through all the nonsense and just get to what his targets were. And he achieved those targets because he was so clear about what needed to be done and who needed to help him to do.
Thank you so much for your contribution, a political analyst and a journalist from Islamabad joining us. Thank you so much. As you can see on your screens, we're getting live images from the mausoleum of Imam Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, is going to address the mourners any minute now. As you can see, there are squares of mourners who have gathered.